Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. We've got Nigel Cannons here. He's the CTO at Intelligent Voice. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Nigel.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks ever so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been a busy time for you. I know that we scheduled this in like, I don't know, like, was it March, February, something like that? And, you know, this was like the next available date, which is quite scary for two reasons. One, like, that's an incredibly busy schedule, but two, that doesn't feel like that long ago.
No, I know. Well, I think we've all been so caught up in the political side of life that, you know, there's been a lot going on around the place for everyone. But yeah, certainly from a business point of view, we've had an enormous amount on. There's a lot of excitement about the voice space and the types of things that we're doing. And so, and I tend to find myself bouncing around on aeroplanes a lot. So yeah, but as I said, delighted to be here today. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you.
Absolutely, mate. And I like to say, I can't think of too many more, I suppose, compelling spaces to be in than kind of what you're occupying at the moment, and really being at the kind of the brink of, I suppose, a lot of conversation for various reasons as well. Like you're saying, at times does it get quite noisy with that regard, and is there aspects to the role where you kind of, I suppose, find peace in perhaps just, you know, building out the product and the core functionality and things like that?
Yeah, it's interesting for me because my role has morphed quite a lot in the organization over the course of the last few years. So I'm one of the co-founders. We started working in voice about 10 and a bit years ago now. And when I first started, really, it was just about building out core technologies and core capabilities. Back in those days, speech recognition was tough. I mean, really tough to do. They used a huge amount of processing power. It wasn't very accurate. You had to train it for each person you had on it. So we faced a lot of challenges in the early days. And so a lot of my work back then was in R&D and that type of stuff. And we pioneered a whole load of techniques in terms of how to do speech recognition better. And maybe I'm sure we'll come onto that as we keep chatting. But in recent years, I spend more and more of my time kind of evangelizing and also explaining voice technology, because there's a huge amount of misunderstandings in the marketplace as to A, what it can do, and B, where some of the pitfalls are. And so a lot of my job is I go to conferences, I go and see customers, I sit on conference calls. And so to answer your question, absolutely, there are times when it's actually quite nice just to sit at my desk and be presented with a challenging technical problem that I get my teeth into for a couple of days. But sadly, my diary doesn't allow me to do that very often at all. Not these days.
I know, it's frustrating, right? But I suppose that's part of the parcel, I suppose, of being the top dog, I suppose, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, one of the things about running a business is always the fact that you're not going to be constrained by a single title. You know, I'm probably also the chief marketing officer as well as the CTO. So those are the, you know, chief evangelical officer. You know, I'm the bloke who's out there talking about it all the time. So you're dealing with a wide range of things in a smaller business, and that means you have to be ready for pretty much anything. But at the end of the day, someone has to be responsible for the technical direction of a software product. And at the end of the day, that's me. And if we're going in the wrong direction, we don't sell anything. And if we're going in the right direction, then we hope we're going to sell more. So yeah, it's, you know, that's where you find yourself in a company like ours. It's slightly less well-defined.
Yeah, well, that's the nice thing about it, though, as well. Give us a bit of context as well on Intelligent Voice. I was just thinking then, like, I have a good idea, but perhaps maybe for people listening, just to get a bit of context in what we were perhaps referring to.
Yeah, absolutely. So Intelligent Voice, we specialize in speech processing for what we call privacy-sensitive environments. So people who need some form of speech technology, but the requirements they have for that process is such that, you know, they have to do it in a way that it's not being sent to the cloud. It's easy to audit what's happened to it. So, for example, things like financial services, for example. So if you phone up a call center at a bank and the bank need to analyze what's been said, they want to turn it to text or they want to identify who's been speaking, you don't want your audio being sent out to the cloud, processed in America or China or somewhere like that, and not know what's happened to it. So we put systems together which enable someone like a bank to do really secure but high quality speech processing in their own data center or in their own private cloud. And that's really been the core of our business for the last 10 years now. And really what we've seen change in that time are the techniques that we use, and you know, things like AWS have come along, Amazon Web Services and Microsoft Azure, to enable people to run private cloud services. But there's also been a blurring of the lines, and people have this idea that, oh, I see an API for speech, I put in my audio and it comes back as text and that's great, without really thinking about some of the privacy elements of it. So that's the market that we sit in, and we're very much a mass conversion type of software. So, you know, we can take hundreds of thousands or potentially millions of phone calls and process them. We're not really a desktop speech type of organization. So people have used kind of drag and dictate on the desktop or something like that. That's not where we play. We're very much big scale stuff. And that means we've sold to the American government, we've sold to the UK government, we've sold to a lot of big four consultancies, a lot of the big law firms in the world use what we do, prison monitoring, call centers, all types of things, but always people who have privacy at the heart of what they do.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, your background is quite interesting. Weren't you a lawyer?
Ah, yes, my guilty secret.
Right.
So the story runs a bit like this, that for better or for worse, my dad sold the first ever personal computers in Europe in 1978. And I was about 10 years old at the time, and I'd always really looked up to it. But his business went up and went down, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I walked into his office one day. I'd been living in America for a year. And I walked into his office for a day and I said to him, I'm going to do what you do. I want to run my business. You know, I'm 18 years old. I'm going to go out and do this. And he swore at me for the first time in my life. And I shan't repeat exactly what he said on the podcast. But what I can say is he said, if you've got any idea how hard this has been, he said, go out and get a proper job. And frankly, I couldn't think of any proper jobs to do. So I couldn't add up. So, you know, I couldn't be an accountant. Couldn't stand the sight of blood, couldn't be a doctor, couldn't write, so I couldn't be a teacher. And I thought, well, lawyer's the only thing left. And that's literally what I did. But I went off and worked at some of the big technology companies that were around in the late 90s, NCR, EEA Systems, who got taken over by Oracle, as a lawyer, but working very closely with technology and kept a really close eye on my passion. And I was lucky enough, I made a bit of money out of stock options and used that to invest in small technology startups. And that ultimately led to me starting my own and ending up doing the one thing I said I'd never do, which is sell to lawyers. So, you know, it was a big circle, sadly. But
it kind of makes sense, though, at the same time, like why you would still kind of stay in this space with the background, because it's so totally related.
It is. And of course, you know, lawyers are obsessed with privacy, they're obsessed with security, they're obsessed with getting things right. So, yeah, it was almost inevitable that when I started looking at speech technology as an area, I was going to be focused on those things. Because I'd actually come from a background of when we first started off, what we were trying to do was look at holistic communication flow, by which I mean, in any organization, it could be email, it could be instant messaging, it could be Word documents, and also audio as well, and bringing those all together and trying to find out within those what was the most unusual things that were being said. And a lot of it was based around, I wrote the Twitter trending tool before Twitter themselves wrote the Twitter trending term, as a way of trying to, you know, what's interesting in 140 characters. And we use that as the backbone for then trying to take mass surveillance and building it up from there. And focus down on voice, really, when it became clear that that was very much our USP. We were doing clever stuff with voice that no one had even thought of before.
Interesting. It is a fascinating space, voice. It's still, like, so much so in its infancy from, like, a consumer products perspective. But obviously you're kind of looking at things from a different perspective. But is there any kind of crossover with regards to, like, on the innovation side, where you kind of see it from a consumer-facing perspective? Is there any similarities in those, in the pain points, perhaps?
There is a massive crossover, actually, and a number of levels. And this is probably where I tail off into a 15-minute monologue if you're not careful. So stop me when you need to. But this is kind of interesting, because what consumer voice did was alerted the business world to the fact that voice was a viable medium. So I, for my sins, I spend a lot of time speaking at conferences, and I've got this slide, and I first started showing this in 2015. And at the top of it, it says 2015 is the year of voice. And I gave all these examples of banks being fined for LIBOR and Siri and all this type of stuff. And then in 2016, I stood up and I had the same slide. I said, well, 2016 is the year of voice. Absolutely, without question, 2016 is the year of voice. And I have to say, the first year when I can genuinely say from a business perspective that voice began to be taken seriously was 2018. So I spent 4 years standing up showing this slide to people until I finally got it right. You know, it was like the stop clock being right twice a day. I eventually cracked it. And the reason for that was really Alexa, to be honest. So Siri didn't actually put much of a dent in the public's usage of voice. So it opened it up as an idea, but we ran a lot of surveys back when Siri first came out, and what we found was that most people who even bothered to use it only used it occasionally, because actually they didn't find it useful. And this is one of the reasons why there was the big hype in the late 80s and early 90s about speech recognition on the desktop. When people actually tried to use it, they found that for whatever reason it didn't meet their needs, and that could be because they had to train it. In a lot of cases, you're in an open plan office. So if I'm sitting in an open plan office, the last thing I want to do is be shouting out loud all the things that are going to my email. So actually, it's quick, it's easier, and you know, just to learn to touch type and whack it out like that. So what changed with Alexa, and what became really interesting with that, is none of the ideas that Amazon put together were actually particularly new. So they had a hardware device that had 7 microphones in it, uses a technique called beamforming to help isolate the voice. But this technology has been around for a long time. Speech recognition technology has been around for a long time as well. And even the way they do intent matching, so this idea of kind of building rules out to understand what's being said, again, none of that was particularly new. But the way they packaged it into a consumer device that you wouldn't mind using is what was quite brilliant. Because if I'm standing in my kitchen, I don't mind saying, Alexa, what's the weather? Alexa, give me some news. Because I feel comfortable in that environment. And so Alexa was really the first voice-activated device that people felt comfortable using. And that totally transformed the landscape in terms of how people looked at voice. Because they kind of sat up and said, wow, this is fantastic. We can do all sorts of things with voice. And why don't we have voice-enabled chatbots? And why don't we, we've got all these telephone calls at work. Why don't we use Alexa-type stuff to control what happens to them, or to start to index them and actually read and look at them? So things that we've been saying for a long time, but you kind of had to shift the dial on what people believed was possible with voice. The dangers, or the interesting things that come out of it, like, fall into a couple of different categories. So firstly, speaking to an Alexa and trying to get good speech recognition out of that is, it's not easy, but it's straightforward, in the sense that you've got a single person speaking to a single microphone using a limited number of potential words. And often people are speaking slowly. in order to make sure that they're understood. When you're looking at things like telephony, which is the area that we work in, you suddenly begin to realise that people speak completely differently. They speak very quickly, they speak over each other, they speak in a very, very conversational style, and also telephone calls are really, really low quality. So the way in which we send telephone calls over copper wire, has the last time it changed significantly was 1972. So we're using 1972 technology to transmit this stuff around the place. Mm. So telephony speech is... So that's one thing. So people go into work and they say, if my Alexa device can understand me, I expect that I can sort through all my phone calls and all of that and get the same level of quality. You can't. But there's another really interesting side to what came out with Alexa and voice technology, which was the issue of privacy. And it's one which has been highlighted quite starkly recently, but I've been talking about this for a couple of years now, what I call the magic pipe fallacy. And the magic pipe fallacy is something that I introduce particularly to people in financial services, because for me, the scariest phrase in the English language is, Alexa, what's my bank balance? and really, you know, the reason for this is pretty straightforward, because when you speak to Alexa, everything you say is taken to the Amazon servers. The Amazon servers turn it to text. They run it against a skill, they look up what you need, they then send that data to where it's going, so in this case, my bank, and then the bank send that information back. So let's say that, you know, I'm £300 overdrawn. Alexa will say, Nigel, you are £300 overdrawn. All of that data has gone through Amazon. And what we knew was happening, but only discovered recently to be absolutely true, is that Amazon have an office block full of people listening into things that people have said to Alexa, because they're trying to improve the transcription. They're trying to improve the quality of it. So all of those things I'm saying, let's say it was a healthcare app. Can you imagine? You know, if I'm talking to Alexa and say, Alexa, I have a really embarrassing personal problem and this is what it is. That's gone straight into an Amazon data center. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's a fact. You know, that's how these things have to work. So the magic pipe fallacy is when I explain to people that there is no magic pipe that goes between the Alexa device and the ultimate provider of the information. So, you know, when I speak to Alexa and say, what's my bank balance? It doesn't kind of call my bank up and say, tell me what Nigel's bank balance is, using this magic pipe between the two. What it's actually doing is going via Amazon and out. And so privacy for me, or the loss of privacy in voice, is one of the most dangerous, the most challenging things that we face in the industry at the moment. A lot of the work that we do is educating people on how to overcome those privacy concerns and how to actually, you know, get the voice experience they want, but without necessarily sacrificing that level of privacy and data to big cloud providers. And, you know, best luck to Amazon and Google and all those guys. What they've done is marvellous. But frankly, I don't want my health data, I don't want my financial data passing through those type of assistants. So when you say it's in its infancy, you're absolutely right, not just in technology terms, but also in consumer understanding of really what's going on.
Yeah. It's frightening in a way, though, isn't it? It is, like, to hear that. I guess it is scary for people.
I think it's extremely scary because there's something about voice which is different to almost anything else. And when you send an email, it's because you've typed it, it's kind of anonymous in a sense. So, you know, you've spent some time thinking, you've reduced your thoughts to paper, you've considered it for a bit, there's nothing unguarded in it, you know, you kind of sat there and reduced it to a fairly clinical form. But when you're on the phone or when you're conversing, it's quite different. You've got all of the emotion in it. You've got its stream of consciousness. You're not thinking about what you say. You can't go back and edit what you said on a phone call. You know, once it's out, it's out. You know, talking about, you know, can't unring a bell. Well, that's exactly what happens with voice. And also, we all know that when we hear a recording of ourselves, we hate the way we sound. So there's something really kind of visceral about voice, which is quite different to other types of kind of written data. And so I think that voice is quite a unique medium in that regard. And I think it's one of the reasons why people begin to sit up and say, hang on a second, yeah, you know, we love these voice assistants, but what's really happening to my data? What, you know, what's going to be done with it? Who can listen in to me?
Mm.
And Amazon, front of Amazon, I saw a news article yesterday, have applied for a patent which is about how they begin to listen to you before you say Alexa. Now, you know, at the moment, what happens on the Alexa device is they record everything you say on loop. So, you know, that loop might only be 30 seconds long, and they do a very quick, what's called a watchword analysis. So if you say, if it detects that a speech pattern which looks like Alexa has been said, then they will send the audio out to the cloud. But now what they're suggesting is that actually they'll start to listen before you say it. So they'll start to do that recognition before you say it. So let's say, for example, I said, play songs by Elton John, Alexa. That actually it would have done that play songs by Elton John before the Alexa watchword. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how they make that work in practice, whether they end up sending all of your data to the cloud, but only acting on the stuff which contains the Alexa piece, or whether hopefully they start to move some of the processing down to the Alexa device. But of course, that's expensive. You know, the processing power to do good speech recognition isn't available on a device that only costs £50 or $50, or in the, you know, on your Black Friday sale, £29 or $29. So, you know, they're using the cloud to overcome the technical limitations of those local devices. But, you know, we're not seeing a trend towards big tech providers not using your data. So, you know, that move towards on-device, I think, is still, you know, we're still quite a long way away from that.
Yeah. Interesting. It's really interesting. And like you say, it's frightening at the same time, isn't it? Because, you know, there are major privacy concerns, and I think that it has been quite well documented, but I still don't think that people truly understand. And what's the answer, really, you know, to trying to solve these problems, you know, without getting overly, I suppose, political on it? What is there a cut and dry answer that could essentially solve this, or is it that we are going to give, you know, we're going to enforce less government control to enable innovation? There's a fine line there, though, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's an interesting question, because in the kind of mass consumer market, we're already trading privacy for convenience. So, you know, I use Gmail, half the planet uses Gmail, we use Facebook, we use Insta, we use all of these things. And because these things are provided for free, we are paying for that freedom by giving up privacy. We're giving up data about ourselves. And as they say, data is the new oil. You know, that's what, you know, why is Facebook valuable? Facebook is valuable because of the data that it can gather. And part of that data goes into serving better adverts to you. In fact, most of it goes into serving better adverts to you. And so in that sphere, until we have like a kind of TV license to the internet, then you're always going to end up with those problems. The voice side is a little bit more interesting in a sense, because in most cases, we're actually spending money on buying these devices in the first place. So, you know, as of yet, Amazon have not offered me an Echo device for free. So I've got to go out there, I've got to give them my credit card, and I pay for a piece of hardware. So there is scope within that to find ways of making these things more private. And I'll give you a couple of examples of it. So one is actually fairly straightforward, which is you can do speech recognition on a local device. So, for example, we recently developed an app which does speech recognition locally on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. Because when you speak to Siri, all of that stuff goes out to the cloud. So even though it's really quick, it's all done in the cloud. You try putting your plane on airplane mode, switching off all your Wi-Fi and so on, and you'll see that Siri becomes unavailable. So an iPhone has got enough power to do speech recognition locally. And actually, Google have recently announced the fact that they're going to start doing an element of offline speech recognition on high-powered Android devices. So, you know, we're getting to the point where you can do it locally. But, you know, a phone's expensive still. And a phone that can do this might cost you 500 quid. So then you look at the Alexa-type device or the Google Home-type device. Well, we're actually not too far off being able to run really good speech recognition on something, say, as big as a Raspberry Pi. And that's a kind of 35 quid device. So if the market were there to build what you might call a voice-activated browser. So something which works in your home, and you say, you know, hello, Nigel's home device. You know, tell me what my bank balance is, or, you know, give me the dates for George Washington or something like that. And all that processing can be done on device. Then actually you're laughing. You don't need to have... you don't need to have an Amazon in the middle. And there have been a few attempts to do this. There's a device called Mycroft, which does an element of speech recognition and intent matching on device. That's one way you can do it. And then the other way is actually to use encryption techniques. So we developed something a while back which actually enables you to search through voice even when it's encrypted, using encrypted search terms. So you can actually do all this in the cloud, but you can do it all in the encrypted domain. So that privacy that you need is never sacrificed. And then there's a final sort of intermediate stage, which is you say, well, hang on, I could do the speech processing locally, but if I do that, I can anonymize the data. I can take the voice out, I can turn it into text and send it into an Amazon or somewhere like that, without sacrificing privacy. So a bit like doing an ordinary Google search, you know, like I've typed it in and it goes, you can do that. So there are techniques that can be done. It is an element of consumer pressure, will be one of them without question, because of course your Facebooks and your Amazons and so on rely upon your data in order to make money. Without it, they can't. So they're gonna be reluctant to give it up. So someone's going to have to come up with something with a special use case which says, well, actually, you know, if I want a healthcare app, it's got to be run on a different type of device. If I want a financial services app, it's got to be on a different type of device. So maybe we'll see banks coming out with it. Maybe we'll see healthcare providers. You know, you might see the Bupa in-home device one of these days. We don't know. Kind of GP with a speaker type of thing. So, you know, it's going to take a few things to change people. An element of availability of the technology, as in literally you buy it on the high street, and also a consumer shift to really get to that point where we stop giving up that privacy.
Absolutely. Oh, mate, it's we could go on for another hour.
Easily.
Well, if not longer. but I think we'll kind of shut things down now. It was a probing question, I suppose, but... What do you think's the going to be in the short term the kind of the area that you'd like to see more emphasis on from like a security perspective?
Well, I think that people are getting really interested in chatbots at the moment. So chatbots are an area that we see an enormous amount of growth in, and most chatbots are still text based at the moment.
Of course. Yeah.
But one of the nice things about it is that in many cases, those chatbots are actually being done directly with a company. So we've worked with a number of banks who have built chatbots. And what we'd like to see is when people implement these type of technologies, don't use cloud APIs and cloud vendors to do the speech processing on it. So because at the moment they've built these chatbots which are actually really secure, you know, they manage all the infrastructure themselves. And because they don't understand how to get the best out of voice, they might say, oh, we'll just send that audio stream out to Google or Amazon. So we'd encourage people to look for vendors. And, you know, we're not the only one, but, you know, to look for vendors who can actually say, we can manage this speech securely for you. And that would give me a lot of confidence because then I could talk to my computer and say, you know, hey, XYZ Bank, what's my bank balance? And they'll tell me and I won't be giving it to Amazon. So that, for me, is probably the biggest short-term thing that I would see from a security perspective.
Nigel, it's been fascinating to listen in today. So thank you so much for taking the time, mate. I really enjoyed it.
No, absolutely. And it's been absolutely fascinating. I love doing this sort of thing. So thanks, Andy, for having me. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how the podcast turns out. So thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.